Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I miss you. What's good, Internet? It is August 21st, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 90. Happy Eclipse Day. The sun is disappearing. I believe a dragon is eating it. You can't prove to me that that's not what's happening. I don't know that the world is actually a sphere. I don't know that there are not evil cosmic forces out there trying to devour our light and our lifeblood.
Wait, is it a dragon or a dinosaur? We gotta get this straight.
Those are not mutually exclusive.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, you're right. You're right about that. That's right.
Tell me, what is the relationship between dragons and dinosaurs, Patrick?
I'm, like, in the factual record or in my heart?
But those two things in my mind line up.
Man, dragons can be dinosaurs, dinosaurs can be dragons. Let your
Hell
heart
yeah.
be open.
Hell
to
yeah.
What
That's
you
right.
want
it's
dragons
the persona
to be.
Of a dinosaur is a dragon. Right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. I would read that like funny little cute kind of maybe bittersweet like persona fan comic, you know?
Yeah.
Those
nice.
Are the voices of Danielle Riendo and Patrick Lepick. Also joining us,
Hi.
Rob Zachney.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
How do you feel about this eclipse and also dragons?
Feeling great about dragons, like I do every day. Like, I'm not some Johnny come lately to the dragon movement. Like, I've been into dragons for years. I got the receipts to prove this, I'm all about the dragons.
This sounds like something you've had to answer to before, Rob. Like, this seems like a rehearsed defensive charge. Like, have you been in a moment where someone has questioned your loyalty to the dragon cause?
Look, I've got a lot of accusers out there. There's a lot of like things you hear about Rob Zachney that are just not true, And
things
one
you
of
hear
those
about
is
robzachney.tumblr.com.
Uh huh.
God.
The faction in Warhammer that has is like dinosaurs is sun based, aren't they? Have you met
like
them
the
yet?
Lizard men?
Yeah, the lizard men. They're like Aztec lizard men who. Are also sun like sun worshippers, but also have dinosaurs and lasers.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
They're kind of sick. They're kind of fucking good.
They felt a little overpowered at E3.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, like you
that's
your
just
army,
history,
like,
Rob. Dinosaurs with lasers who worship the sun are just powerful.
Yeah,
that's true. Facts. Like the early city states of the lizard people. Just had dinosaurs, but then later the idea came, what if we just had really long spears of lasers, and it was a military revolution, there's no stopping them.
That's that. Have you been playing more of that?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch. Like, Total Warhammer kind of swallowed my weekend. Oh. And I haven't been this into a Total War game in quite some time. Like, it has changed quite a bit from vanilla. And it
is this,
feels...
just to be clear, are you playing Total War Warhammer 1 or Total War Warhammer 2?
1. I'm not sure. I'm
not
sure. 2
has not dropped yet.
I don't think so. Like, I've heard some... No, I don't know of anyone who has it.
Okay.
I'm playing the first game, but they just had that... We got into this a little bit on Friday, but they just had this massive update hit, the Foundation update. And the idea there is that they've kept expanding this game over time, that like it just kind of all got out of whack over time as new factions came in,
right.
As new playable heroes came in. And so they sort of rebalanced everything to try to make the game work a bit better. And it sure does. Like, it just feels now much more like less like a little sliver of the Warhammer universe and more like, you know, the whole enchilada, as it were.
Cool.
And I had a, you know, I had a game where I was playing this faction of the dwarves, the clan, the Angrind clan.
And the Angry clan, got it? Okay.
Yeah, they're very angry. Most of the dwarves are in this game.
They've got reasons, right?
They do.
Grudges and whatnot, right?
Oh, man. So many grudges. Like, you would not believe. Like, sometimes I wish they would take it a little bit easier on the grudges, but they don't.
I don't know. I've heard you playing Subterfuge. I know what a grudge really sounds like.
That's fair. Maybe there's a reason I gravitate towards this faction. But I think one of the things they do really well now is Warhammer should feel apocalyptic and like world ending, and now it sure does. Like, there are so many dangerous factions that start coming in from the edges of the map that the mid game just starts to turn into, it's not factions like exchanging cities by the mid game. It's literally just like huge chunks of the map being like burned to a cinder or like fatally poisoned by chaos.
That's kind of cool.
Chaos so magic.
It's and just like
vampires.
Oh, this whole region is gone now, like, or is like changed forever in a way that like is a lot more memorable and a lot more like literally the stage, the board changes to reflect events that happened in a way that isn't just like the we fly red flags, we used to fly blue flags.
Yeah, that was always the way it used to be,
right?
In Total War games, but with Attila, they introduced the idea that you could like raise settlements. And in Warhammer, they make pretty aggressive use of that, in part because in Total War Warhammer, not every settlement is capturable by every faction. So, like, dwarves can only hold, like, mountainous, like, dwarf settlements. Likewise, greenskins can only take dwarf holds. Like, that's kind of, they're kind of like the ultimate squatters.
Right.
You know, they come in, they drive the dwarves out, and then they just trash the place. Humans can, you know, humans exist in the valleys, and their sort of natural adversary is the undead. So there are all these settlements that there's, like, literally nothing you can do except maybe sack them for money or destroy them if you need that place to stop being a problem. And I was doing really well as Clan Angrand. And so Clan Angrand has this overarching goal where they have to get to their old hold, Karak, Eight Peaks, whatever. It's their big overarching goal.
Some capital L lore happening.
Yeah, for sure. I probably dallied a little too much on my way to that goal. I was like playing it like a normal strategy game. And normally the Chaos Invasion isn't that bad if you're pretty far to the south. Because it comes from the north always, the Chaos Wastes. And eventually it just sort of runs out of steam. In this game, though, it went real, real wrong. Because as I'm playing it, I start to notice that, like, this huge, like, devastating war breaks out between the vampire counts and the cities, the factions of the Empire. And they start burning each other's cities, like, right and left. So everything between the Chaos Wastes and sort of my mountain, like, strongholds eventually was just destroyed. And I'm talking, like, I could scroll the map out, and I could not see a settled, like, settlement anywhere. They were all gone. Huh. It was all burned.
That's pretty cool. The
other thing is that because now there were no, like, normal regions anymore on the map, chaos and, like, vampire magic and corruption started to, like, spread uncontrolled. And it started getting into my territories, so I started having, like, undead revolts happening. Even though, like, everything was sort of fine, the problem is...
That's brutal. Like, what do you even fucking do? But, like, because if I'm a leader in this fictional medieval world, I feel like... What faction you were playing? Dwarves, right? So it's like, alright, everybody's got enough to eat, we got enough beer in the tank, we got, like, we've upheld our honor, we've gone to war against people we had grudges with, like, I've done all of the shit that is necessary to be a good dwarf leader. I'm the best of the dwarf kings. And then just, like, a skeleton man shows up. Like, I don't, like, I guess kill it, but, like, there's not... How am I supposed to keep the skeletons happy, Rob? How can there be skeleton revolts?
Yeah, and, you can't keep them happy. So, there's public order, which is reflecting how the dwarves feel about you. And then there's just, like, corruption. And as a province gets corrupt enough, like, the dead just start rising. Or chaos armies start arriving. And the great thing is this is all reflected on the map. So, like, what starts out as, like, gorgeous, like, dwarven strongholds and, like, snowy mountain passes and, like, you know, alpine forest all starts to turn into this, like, poisoned, toxic, like, corrupted hellhole. you know, just mist everywhere. Like the map just starts to like disappear beneath like this miasma of evil. Your armies start like taking attrition damage just from setting foot on this shit. So like mobility decreases because the corruption is so bad. And that kind of spelled the end for me because, well, there were two things. One, because because the vampires and empire took each other out, when the chaos lords started to come from the wastes, there was literally nothing between me and them.
Right.
And I was like, I've got a really good army. Like, it was real good. They hadn't lost a battle.
But that's like...
And I was like, I got this.
You did I not didn't have got this. This.
No. Because the whole... You've already lost it when you let the fucking ground become all vampiric. Like, that's... You can't just win on the battlefield, Rob. You have to win the battlefield itself.
You have to win in their hearts, too. And skeletons don't have hearts. That's
what makes them so hard to win against.
You know, that's what I've been thinking about right now. You know, in terms of medical science, like, that's
Wait,
a real issue.
Aren't there hearts inside of skeletons? Isn't that where my heart is, behind my skeleton?
I mean, it is, yeah. It's in your chest cavity. But, like, skeletons, as I think of them, don't have, like, organs inside them. It's, like, just a skeleton running around.
What if
it's
invisible?
Its own set of problems.
What if that's just a condition of our current healthcare system? What if we could start getting hearts into skeletons?
We need the Skeleton Care Act. We need the SCA. We need to really get in there and get care for these skeletons who need help. That's it, damn it.
I'm with it.
The table.
Yeah. did you end up losing to these skeleton and vampire people, Rob?
Oh yeah, dude, they went through me like a door.
Great.
Like the first army I threw at them was like my best army. They had not lost a battle. But I hadn't really upgraded because I was winning so many fights with normal units. I was like, this is gonna be fine. This isn't gonna be bad. The Chaos guys had hell cannons, which is about what you'd think.
That's not just a fancy name that they use to dress up like shitty cannons. Like, I don't just call them hell cannons. Maybe people will be scared.
No, it's like a big thing that shoots like a demonic fireball.
Okay.
Like,
what's the difference between a normal fireball and a demonic fireball? Is
good
a demon
question.
In the fireball?
I think there might be some demonic, like, yes, there may be some demonic possession of the fireball.
Wow.
I couldn't really tell
That's
you,
committed.
But here's the difference that I've observed. Like, I had cannon as well. Cannonballs just, like, fuck up whatever it hits. A hell cannon fireball will take out, like, a formation of soldiers in two shots.
Ah,
like,
gotcha.
It hits, and it's just like, oh, that's, like, 80 guys who are just gone.
Wow.
Brutal.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, well, I'm glad. Thanks for the update. I hope you figure out how to deal with your skeleton problem soon. that's a tough one. I'll give it some thought. You know, I'll think about whether or not there's some way to combat those who have no hearts. Patrick and Danielle, what are you two been up to?
I think both of those are continuing to play the new Uncharted Lost Legacy.
Yes.
How is that?
It's real good. I really like it. We talked about it a little bit on Friday, you know, just in terms of the two things I think that were sort of the biggest takeaway for this one were that it has more wide open areas that are optional, but that's actually really fun. I'll talk about that in a second. And also that the characters are really fun to kind of hang around with and hear their banter, and it's pretty cool to see them. So in particular, I finished the sort of totally optional wide open area this weekend, which was really a delight. And I, you know, these Uncharted games and, of course, The Last of Us as well are incredibly, incredibly linear games. And there was a tiny bit of 4 where you could kind of go off script a little tiny bit in some driving areas. But this is really the first, like, giant open space that you can actually run around in and find completely optional stuff. And that's actually something that the game kind of lets you know, like, hey, you know, this is just sort of a way to make money. That's the way, like, Chloe kind of puts it. Like, oh, you know, we could get some money off this. This might be worth doing. And the game
is money a thing, or can you buy stuff with money?
No, it just means, like, here's some extra stuff you can do.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. And it was, I think, really well worth doing because it was mostly little puzzles, and that's the part I like the most about these games is actually playing these, like, kind of fun spatial puzzles or just figuring out, like, a little tiny extra area, and it really
helped. You know what, though?
Was...
This game has way too many goddamn it's like an image, and then you've got to shift the tiles in order to line up the image. And
that
then, like,
horse one? was bullshit. Yeah, the horse one was bullshit. Yeah.
Danielle, there are like, it felt like 15 of them by the end of the game. Like at a certain point, I was, one, my wife was mocking me because like, why haven't you solved the puzzle yet? And I was like, because these puzzles are bullshit. I'm tired of doing them. I don't want to slide these tiles anymore. Oh, it's so funny. The fourth one adjusts the second one and the third one at the same time. How about the tiles just match up and we move on and you have some more creative solutions to these? I hate those puzzles. I don't mind doing puzzles in games, but it got incredibly repetitive because they trot out this circular image in which you have to adjust the tiles over and over again in a really frustrating way. But one thing I will make a note of is that while it is a more open area, there's only one of them, and it doesn't actually, like, in a lot of ways, doesn't fundamentally change the design of the game. Like, it's not going to, like, Austin, I would not say it's suddenly going to interest you because
finally,
of the wide open space.
Right, yeah.
And like, Uncharted for me.
It's not like it becomes systemic because it's an open area. There isn't wildlife or like a randomly generated sort of like combat scenario.
Right. There's no there's no like emergent Far Cry, Zelda, Breath of the Wild. Like
it's just big. It's just big. Like, and that,
which is
that,
cool. It seems pretty. It seems like a fun place to drive around a little bit.
Yeah, it is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, and there's also a lot of, like, really tiny, clever little moments in it. Like, there was one part of the puzzle, I won't spoil it, but it just had to do with where you looked and what you were paying attention to, whether you would find the little tiny secret area or not. And it, to be fair, like, it's, I think, 11 little tiny secret areas. They're often not super involved. Some of them had a more involved puzzle, but most of them were just, like, figure out this one little thing, and then you'll go to this little secret, and then you can go to the secret temple where you get a thing, and there's a really cute little bit of dialogue, so it was totally worth doing. But I liked that they're branching out just that little bit.
Is that the draw? I guess that's my question for y'all, is like, when it comes to that stuff, for me, when I'm like exploring, when I'm getting collectibles in games, it either needs to be that like, the core experience of exploring is physically enjoyable for me.
Yes.
In a way that it rarely is in games at this point. Like, I think Zelda is probably the last time, or again, Breath of the Wild was the first time in a long time that I ever committed to, like, doing the, like, oh, I'm going to go find a thing. Before that, it was, God, I don't even remember. Maybe it was, like, Assassin's Creed 2 or something, which was just, like, I loved moving around that world. But most of the time when I'm doing that stuff, it's because there is some reward for finding collectibles. Like, it is like, okay, I'm gonna eventually get a new skin or a new, you know, I can get these agility orbs and that'll let me jump even further, or I'm gonna collect all these shards and then level up my electricity powers or whatever.
There is a reward for, like, they set up a very specific you have to go find 11 little pieces that fit into a larger puzzle that will let you solve an optional thing that you don't have to do if you want to just progress through the story, and it gives you something. I don't even know if I want to say what you get, but you get something extremely useful for a very particular task that is also optional. But if it is something you're interested in doing, it is a just reward for what you're the time that you put in to finding that stuff. Yeah. Like it's not just that you open up a temple and you collect a useless piece of treasure that, you know, goes to a trophy count.
Gotcha.
But it is something pretty neat terms of finding a reward for that fits within what would be useful in an Uncharted game sort of structure.
Okay. Yeah. That would probably drive me forward.
And I thought it was fun. It was a reward for me to have these little puzzles to do, or these little kind of optional areas to do. Because they had a good amount of variety. Outside of, I completely agree with what Patrick said, though, about those rolling whatever puzzles. There were way too many of those. The other puzzles were really
fun. Oh, you're not. You still have like half the game to go, Danielle. Good luck. Have fun.
I'm gonna hit a wall. I hit a wall with that horse one. That horse one was some serious bullshit. I was upset. But the puzzle where you're jumping and you have to avoid the statues that are gonna chop off your head, that one was cool. I liked that one a lot. That was a fun puzzle.
Yeah, it's about eight hours is I think is about what it took me to finish, maybe a little bit less, depending on how much time you invest into the collectibles and things like that. But it's nothing revelatory, but it's very enjoyable. And actually I found it more digestible than like an Uncharted 4, because Uncharted 4 is like a 16, 17?
Jesus. Yeah, that's long. Yeah.
It's way
too long.
It's like
22 chapters in that game.
It is one third too long, like easily. There's way too much fat in that game. And this, like, what ends up grinding me on the larger Uncharted games, and especially 4, which I believe is the longest of any of those games, is the parts that bother me, like the combat, end up grating on me so much because the game ends up relying on that as it goes forward, as more action sequences kick in. Whereas over 8 hours, yeah, I still don't like the combat. Nothing changed by the end to shift my perspective. But there wasn't so much of it that I couldn't get enough of the stuff that I liked. And it just tells like a simple, easy, fun story with good banter that by the end of it, I was like, you know what? If every couple of years they just made one of these as opposed to a brand new Uncharted, it was just sort of like, here's a side story. Like, here's an episodic thing that's happening in the world of Uncharted. Like, I would play one of those every couple of years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. The thing is, I know I'm not going to check it out. And it's
yeah.
I'll definitely check out Last of Us 2 because I think I'm higher on Last of Us than I was on Uncharted. And maybe that's what will break my stone cold heart. I'm the opposite of a skeleton, which is I have a heart, but it's super dense and hard to penetrate. So it's like, we'll see. We'll see if all
it's safer. You're safer that way, you know. It's
yeah, that's true. Exactly. If I can't be touched, nothing can hurt me. That's what I always
And one thing I had brought up on Friday is that, you know, one of my theories or hopes for this game is that, so Last of Us, combat-wise, I felt you have a lot more options. It's a game that like really encourages you to like try different approaches, and there's distractions and stealth. Like, there's just a lot more. Whether or not you like that combat, I did. There is like a lot more going on in the combat of that game.
Right.
And the idea of placing that in larger spaces would be very interesting. I think what they tried to do, or with this open space in Uncharted, would actually fit really, really well in their approach to Last of Us. So I've almost looked at Lost Legacy as sort of a template for what they might be trying to do on a grander scale in Last of Us 2, which I hope is the case, because I think it would actually enhance what the Last of Us, the design aims of Last of Us are a lot more than it enhances the design aims of the Uncharted games.
Cool.
Yeah, totally agree. Last thing I want to say about it is that if you have a game-playing friend or partner or whatever, this is maybe the most fun I've had, like, hot-seating a game in a long time with my girlfriend. Just, we're having such a good time, you know, especially because the combat can wear down a little bit, and because, you know, it is a repetitive type of game. It's climbing, puzzle-solving, and combat, basically. That's you know, kind of what you're doing over and over again. Sort of passing the controller, and she, you know, if she didn't hear a part of it, she was like, what was the banter last time? I need to make sure I'm, you know, up on the banter, basically. It's been really fun to enjoy it that way. I think maybe that's kind of the best way to do Uncharted games in general, but it's been especially fun with this one.
Yeah, I can imagine that making these games way more fun for me would definitely be, one, being able to hand off the controller when I'm interested in story but not in playing, and two, like, even just having another person there so that I wouldn't be in my most critical mode. Do you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
I need to be in. The only way I've ever enjoyed Uncharted games has been like the same way I would enjoy a big summer blockbuster, which is like hanging out with friends and like, you know, with a beer or, you know, with snacks, like very buttoned down. And it's hard for me to do that when I'm just like, all right, I'm playing a game. I'm going to be in the mode that is about like figuring out what I feel really about this game instead of like having the social experience be key being the main thing. So I don't know, maybe I'll maybe that's a thing I can try out. We'll see. I'm not like convinced that I need to like these games, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like a project of mine to do it, but it's a thing that like I do my best to give my to make myself try things I don't like every once in a while just to reevaluate whether or not I'm there, you know.
Gotta check in sometimes. Do a little check in.
Exactly. I've continued to check in with No Man's Sky's new patch, and over the weekend it kind of crossed a threshold for me, in which it shifted from being just kind of quality of life changes to being a more substantial change in how I'm playing it in like a very material way, in that like it used to be that I played No Man's Sky once a month or so. I would dip back in for a night when I was feeling really stressed out, and I would just kind of like bounce from planet to planet and maybe, you know, collect some resources, maybe set myself one or two little goals. Like, oh, okay, I really want to get my multi-tool upgraded in this way, or like, oh, I really want to figure out how to plant and farm this one new plant. I want to find a source for this stuff, whatever. And so I would do that, maybe. Like, most of the time, I would even just, like, I'm going to explore for 45 minutes or an hour or something, like, just to have a little bit of a distraction. I'll listen to a podcast or I'll watch a video on another screen while I'm kind of chilling out. But over the weekend, I hit a part in the main story of No Man's Sky that was added with this new patch, Atlas Rises, which launched like 10 days ago. And it started feeling more like Skyrim to me. Like Skyrim when you're in the middle of like, or like the Oblivion Dark Brotherhood quest, right, is the one where it's like, I need to see the end of this thing. I need to keep going until there was a break in the action and I can breathe again. And it had that effect on me, which I so never expected from No Man's Sky, update or not. Huh. It's
can
been really
spoil
cool.
Why some of that is the case?
Yeah, I totally can. So like, I'll give this, here's like very broad non-spoiler stuff first, and then I'll signal when I'm going to start talking about spoilers. So the basic setup for this story mode is that there, you get contacted by somebody else who's exploring the world, right? Who's exploring the galaxy, and they're kind of stuck on a planet, and you're trying to like meet up with them. And the kind of intro set of these quests is like very not dry, but like it's very straightforward. Oh, and like if you've played a lot of this game, like I have, it's still kind of shaking because it's like, oh shit, there's a communications message in my ship. No one has ever spoken to me before unless I've walked up to them and pressed X. So like even being called on the phone feels weird. But you know, you're like, okay, we're gonna try to like triangulate where you are, and then we're gonna get back together, and everything's gonna be cool. And then something goes wrong, and you can't get hooked up with them, and you end up meeting a different NPC who has a little more personality, kind of an asshole, like a robot guy named Apollo. A robot person. I think they use they them for basically every NPC actually in the game. And then that goes into more a little bit of tutorialization around like getting your base together, and then things end up going into a direction where you hit this fevered pitch, and I'll describe what happens here because I think it's really fantastic. It's one of my favorite moments this year. But first, just broadly, the thing that it does is combine procedurally generated content like places with handcrafted content like dialogue and like specific spaces inside of the procedurally generated ones, or specific, even just knowing, setting up the line of events so that you will end up on a certain type of planet in a way that produces this really fantastic effect. And then there's just like the sound design and all this other stuff comes together to produce a sort of like, the word I used in the write-up I did of it today on the site, waypoint.vice.com, is fevered. Like, it's just this like rapid, I have to find out what happens next. I have to get to this next spot. I have to keep going. And that's never been the way No Man's Sky has been for me. I've always been this kind of leisurely pace. And so like the way it delivers on that stuff is fantastic. All right, I'll talk a little bit about what actually happens here in this. Again, it's pretty early on. This is supposed to be a 30-hour story mode, and I think I'm probably like 6 hours into it. So you meet this dude Apollo, you meet this robot Apollo who's like, hey, come, I can help you find your other friend who went missing. And so you start building a base, and when you build that base, you meet all these NPCs who you recruit to come into the base, and they all start sending you off on missions. And also, they did that in a past upgrade, or past update, too, when the bases were first added, but now like they're good at giving lore and giving kind of descriptions about the world and the different races and cultures in a way that's really appealing and really like intriguing. So like the Viking you learn are now you've always known them as like the warrior race, right? Like they're No Man's Sky's answer to the Klingons or whatever. Except now you learn that like their entire thing is they are a warrior race who wants to destroy all weapons in the galaxy and then themselves because they've seen what great weapons can do. And it's like, okay, that's a little dark. And you learn a little bit more about how the robot people work and how they're like this mix of individualized and distributed consciousness. And maybe they have something to do with the big Atlas constructs out in the world. You're not really sure. And then Apollo ends up sending you to like, he's like, all right, well, we have to fucking figure out what's up with these robot consciousnesses. He's like really rude in a really good way because like I've never expected anything in No Man's Sky to be rude. And so it works really well. And he sends you to like.
I have to say, I'm picturing Apollo from Battlestar Galactica this entire time. Oh, and I know that's not who it is.
It's not who it is.
But
no,
that's who
sadly.
I'm picturing.
It's like a big robot guy with like a big like pyramid head. It's
okay.
He's like, I think he's on their official site. I keep saying he because his name is because their name is Apollo, and I think of Apollo exactly like you. I'm like, okay, it's Apollo. So you end up. He's like, okay, go break into this facility with the robot people, the Korvax, to see like if they line up with the Atlas in any way. And you do that, and then you go from there to a bunch of different ruins, and the ruins start getting really self-referential. Where it's like it starts referencing the fact that there are 18 quintillion planets, and like, oh, you're a traveler. Is there value in life if you can't visit all of them? It's like literally speaking to the sort of player who is like, this is the last best game I'll ever need to play. And then it goes just completely wild. You get led to this portal, and the portal itself is super creepy. Maybe it was partially because it was like in the middle of the night when I found it, in terms of both my real life and in the game world. And it just opens up with this just like really like mechanical, but like this bassy, voluminous sound that startled me like three times in a row, even though I knew it was coming each time, or the second two times at least. And like, all right, I'm going to open this portal, and you're going to walk through the portal, and you have no idea where it's going to take you. And you walk through, and it takes you to this world of like living glass. Everything is made up of these like of glass. Like there's like glass trees, and the ground is glass, and there are little glass discs floating around. And there is a planet like looking like it's about to eclipse the sun. And your UI just freaks out, and it just says like breach, 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 anomalous signal detected. And your ship is nowhere to be seen, and you see things moving around. There's a bunch of sentinels moving around, which are like the automated drones. And the world starts to go white, and like a really low bass hum starts coming up. And the whole thing is like really fucking creepy because you're just alone out in the middle of nowhere. And then you get zipped away again to one of these Atlas stations where there are just like three floating bodies in the sky looking down at you, like with white behind them. I'm gonna just show you guys this one photo because it's just like, what the fuck is going on? Is this still No Man's Sky? Because it's just like, it was one of these moments like, all right, this is actually scaring me a little bit in terms of its, again, its audio design, it's the location there, and then just like more dialogue boxes, and you're just talking to people, and you're getting more like creepy, you know, mysterious sci-fi stuff, right, about how long it's been since the diagnostics were run and blah blah blah. It's like the sort of stuff that got people into like the Halo fiction originally, of like ancient alien race, who knows what the mystery here is. And then it just spits you out onto another random planet, and your ship is 7 minutes away, broken. And it's just like, all right, I'm gonna come down from this really intense fevered experience and walk 7 minutes and just kind of like recollect myself and gather resources so I can repair my ship when I get there. And it's just like a really great, well-paced moment that I never would have expected would have been in No Man's Sky at all, let alone like executed on well. And it's made me start to think about what a game like this might look like in 5 or 10 years. Like, I was telling Janine Hawkins about this, and she said, like, it sounded like I was describing Arena, the Elder Scrolls Arena, and like this is No Man's Sky Arena. What does No Man's Sky Skyrim or No Man's Sky Oblivion look like 5 or 10 years from now, where everything has been kind of honed and zeroed in on? And it probably won't be No Man's Sky. It probably will be something from a Bethesda or a BioWare or someone who uses this combination of procedural generation and handcrafted spaces to produce really surprising effects like this. But this is the first time that I was able to see that version of this pitch and not just the kind of like, I'm going to laze around and go from place to place and I don't really care about a story.
It's really too bad. It sounds like the game that people wanted is now there, and most people are never going to
never. And it's a bummer because if they had just released this game as early access somehow, I think we would be in such a different place.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like,
yeah, because I think then you can hand wave away a lot of stuff. You know, like, even if there was early access, like, this is kind of a 1.0, and then we're working toward, like, we're adding the story stuff in the next year. Like, yep. Come back.
Yep. That's what The Long Dark did, and it seems like people really liked The Long Dark. So, like, I feel like there's a world in which...
I mean, they basically, there's a, no matter what they do, no matter what sort of convincing you trying to say, like, that they might have done with this to make it better, until they attach a 2 to it,
yeah,
a lot of people aren't going to give it the time of day.
And I don't know if they will. Like, I wonder what this team thinks they're going to do in 3 years. Like,
you wouldn't blame them for wanting to not go down the No Man's Sky path
totally
again.
Totally. But I also want them to, right? What this makes me want is, we've said before, I think, oh, what if instead of 18 quintillion planets, there were 300 or 100 that were procedurally generated, and they picked the best ones, and they built them out a little bit more with hand-placed stuff. But now, not only do I have that in my head, but I have the, like, I want to join, like, the Space Wizards Guild. I want to join the Mercenaries Guild. I want to go down the plot lines in a world like this and not just the one main core one. Like, there isn't, those things don't exist in this game. Like, there's faction reputation that you can grind out, and there are like things like that here, but they're not like proper quest lines the way that you would find in a Fallout or in a Dragon Age or something like that. And I would love a version of No Man's Sky that is more tightly compact in terms of the size of the galaxy, still procedurally generated to create those planets, because it's too much work to just hand generate hundreds of planets, and then just let me then like dive into specific stories that you've designed there. I think this is a really good proof of concept for what that looks like, and I'm curious to see where it goes from here, you know. I didn't mean to talk about No Man's Sky for so long again, but I really like it.
Well, that's the problem. If you ask Austin a No Man's Sky question, you're not going to get 60 seconds
no,
back.
You're
going
to
get 6 minutes.
It's true. The only other thing I really played this weekend was more PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but I want to shout out what I played, which was I did custom games for the first time, which lets you play with just a bunch of people that are all, you all know each other. So it was like, I think 60 people total, plus then 40 people who are watching on various streams were able to hop in and join the game too. And on top of doing like squad games, we ended up doing 8-person team games. And if you think No Man's fucking Jesus, if you think PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, we think No Man's Sky is interesting. No Man's Battlegrounds. God, don't get me started. I wish No Man's Sky had Battlegrounds combat. That would be incredible. If you think Battlegrounds is weird with like, or like intense with 4 people, with 8, it's just like,
I can't even imagine. Rob, I can't fathom.
Rob, I need you just to watch the archives of this to it looks like Company of Heroes or something, because you end up doing the thing of like, all right, I'm going to move these 4 people up to this ridge line, that these other 4 are going to go over to that ridge line. And when I say we, what I mean is like Danny O'Dwyer splitting us up into mini battle groups.
Wait, was he
like
your general?
Basically, it was like him and Pasquale were basically our leader. I guess Matt Pasquale was our leader, and then Danny was definitely our sharpshooter all weekend, was just like... It's just an incredible shot. There was definitely a bit where it was like all of us hidden in a house and Danny just like outside the house next to a little bit of cover, sniping dudes up on a hill and like, all right, Danny, you got us covered. It's like so much fun to play that way. I hope that they figure out how to make 8-person groups a non-custom game thing, because we have to do it at some point. You just like move out in a fan. It's incredible. It made me want to play 20-person teams where there is literally like an EVE Online style general who is like subdividing out communications relays and stuff. Like, I want the game in which, Patrick, you have a squad of 4, I have a squad of 4, Danielle has a squad of 4, Rob has a squad of 4, but then Rob is also like talking to you, me, and Danielle and telling us where to move our squads, and we're relaying those. I want that game now. I know that the game is just Arma. I understand that's what that is. But we don't play Arma. Like, do you know what I mean?
Well, the difference is that, like, we have now crested on the steep learning curve of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. That doesn't mean we're good, but it means we understand the game.
Right.
And, like, I don't have the time nor the wherewithal to do that again with Arma. Like, I have PlayerUnknown.
It scratches that itch. Yes.
And so I just want... I want other things to come to funnel into PlayerUnknown so that I can have those experiences through that game. And that's the kind of thing where you know, the player base of this game, 8 million sold, you know, 600,000 concurrent players. And like, this game is going to be around for 5-10 years. Like, yes. I feel like this game is very quickly establishing itself as, like, a permanent mark in video games. Like, that's, like, hard to see that far in the future, but
But the numbers are there.
I'm not going to be shocked if this, the world will move on from this game in the discussion sense, but in the way that Counter-Strike is still a thing, you know, Dota is still a thing, like, I think Battlegrounds is going to become one of those games that is just a fixture.
Right.
Just going forward.
I can't wait to see how it all shakes out in that way.
Lots of people want a brief glimpse into the future, see what like life is like after Trump is out of office. I want to see what this game looks like in 5 years.
Seriously. I just linked for y'all in chat, or not in chat, for just you, the people I'm talking to, a video, because not only was I playing in this eight-man squad game, but also it was being streamed out to viewers, not from Waypoint, but from twitch.tv/gamesbeat, G-A-M-E-S, yeah. Beat, B-E-A-T. It's the tech, or the venture beat games vertical, I guess. And it also was the first time I'd seen any of the spectator stuff that has like an observation mode that is incredible. Patrick, you should definitely look at this too.
I'm looking at it right now.
I'm looking at the Bud Light ad.
Okay, well, shout outs, I guess, to advertisements. The way in which you can jump between different like players to view them, the way in which it shows you like what weapons people have and how much health they have, and the way that you can zoom out to a map view and just see the little like arrows moving around. You can see every player on the map moving around is so cool. I cannot wait to watch like this big Gamescom tournament that's about to kick off. Yeah, dude.
Oh my god, amazing!
It's so good. Like, there's a sequence at like 3 minutes or something where you can see everybody land, and like, or not 3 minutes, 3 hours in, and it's just like, oh, this is just like eight bodies lying, like coming to the ground with really great user interface around them that like shows them all going into different houses, and then like when the fighting starts, you just get this just fantastic.
Holy
like awareness.
Shit, the map with everybody and where they're falling.
That's real good.
It's so
holy shit, this does
good.
Look like Company of Heroes.
Yeah, I know, dude. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, I can't wait.
Holy
I'm
shit.
I'm going to end up watching competitive Battlegrounds matches in a couple of weeks.
It's going to be incredible.
This week.
This week. I'm excited to watch a competitive. I think I'm esports now.
Oh.
It's really cool.
Are we going to shoutcast these, Austin Walker?
Maybe. When do they happen?
I don't know. We should look that up.
We should do at least one.
That might be fun.
That would be very fun.
Also, shout outs to that green screen trying to cope with Jeff Grubb's hair.
Oh, shout outs to Jeff. Jeff is a fan and a fellow and a peer in our industry and put this all together. Like he like made a group in Discord once and started inviting like everyone he knew and was like, do you work in games or games journalism? What if we played PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds together? So I think he's doing this every weekend basically. He does a pretty good job as a shoutcaster during this stuff, too.
All right, I think this is what gets me on board.
There it is. Finally.
Rob's not going to play. He's just going
to
watch in
we just need to
spectator
get him,
mode.
We need a mode where there's like a limited observer mode that only shows your team, right? From the observation mode, so you can see where everybody on your squad is using the 3D camera. And then like maybe they can send up drones or like UAVs or something so that you can just spot other player characters.
You're describing like everything that like other military shooters have already done. It's going to be great. Like every single other game that like spawned something like Battlegrounds is going to be modded back into Battlegrounds and it's just going to be endless 100%. Recursion. People be like, did you hear the battlefield mode of PUBG is now getting its own standalone? No fucking way, really?
Oh, do you
did
mean
you
Battlefield
added...
Battlegrounds?
Yeah.
They added Jason Voorhees to Battlegrounds.
Oh my god. I mean, I'd play that game.
Yeah,
I'd play
I would
that game.
Too.
Fuck. Just let one player teleport around the map and they only have melee weapons and they have just like, you know, 3,000 HP or something. That'd be fun. God.
I just want real controller support. That's
soon,
all.
Soon. They're
you
working
know,
on it.
That's once that happens, Auntie Knuckles is going to be in there full time.
We should.
I'm going to knuckle up with the three ninjas.
We should try the Steam controller with you in Battlegrounds, Danielle. Okay. I have a Steam controller here. So
I think I do too.
Wait, is the Steam controller good at anything, though?
People have come, I don't know. Who the fuck knows?
I just have a broken ass wrist. That's all. I just can't do WASD.
Right, I gotcha.
5 minutes. That's all. Yeah. That's all. That's my only problem. I'll be in there soon. One day.
I think it's supposed to hit Xbox One this week. Not this week. This year. This year.
Well, I wonder if anyone at like Bohemia is like kicking themselves for having taken DayZ and just gone like all the way down the sim rabbit hole.
Yep.
Rather than
the arcade-y.
Yeah.
Yeah, they better be, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure lots of people are still really happy with DayZ. But none of us, apparently, because none of us said yes, it was me who was happy with it.
I'm actually not sure people are. Like, to be honest, has it fallen off? I think the feature creep might have really started to turn that community off after a point.
That's the thing I'm hoping that doesn't happen here. Like, I really hope that this stays focused on what it is, or at least maybe, like, creates other modes where there is feature. I mean, like, if they have a good idea for a different feature, stick it in one map or stick it in one different mode type, you know? But it doesn't have to be... I'm glad I don't have to play a game of zombies PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds every map rotation or whatever, you know? So... All right, I think that's going to do it for me in terms of things I've played. Sorry, I need to turn off this video of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I just saw somebody get shotgunned, and it was very good. All right, I've closed it. I'm focused now, focused on video games, focused on my job.
There you go.
Did anybody else touch anything this weekend, or should we wrap up?
That eclipse is going to happen here.
Yeah, it's happening.
Minutes.
All right, you should go see that eclipse. Everyone be careful.
I'm not going to see the eclipse.
Go see it.
It's cloudy. It's going to rain, but I'll look in the... Can the eclipse hurt you if you can't see it?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
That's a good... No one emailed us eclipse questions. I just checked. No eclipse questions.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Weird. I got an email here from Chase on Twitch who says, hey, NASA's streaming an eclipse right now. Which is, yeah, okay.
There are 60,000 people watching that on Twitch right now.
Jesus Christ. Is it happening? Does NASA have a good shot?
Yeah, they're kind of going around from the different places it's happening across the country as it's taking place. So
it's dark. Look at how dark it is in Beatrice, Nebraska. NE is Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
This is wild.
It's wild. I put up curtains for the first time in my life. I used a drill. I made pilot holes, and I put on curtain rods so that my pets would not look outside during the eclipse.
That's very kind of you.
I've since heard that pets don't usually look at the sun
anyway.
They
really
don't. Yeah.
But
did you read one of those articles and get worried?
This is wild.
No, my mom texted me and was like, your pets could look outside at the sun. Oh, you don't want them to go blind.
Oh, that's definitely not a thing.
Danielle, you got hit with like a chainmail.
You know, I needed...
That's so good that you did that. That's adorable.
For the pets. It's very adorable. Good.
I love my cat.
To be fair, Drake probably would.
To be honest, Drake is not the smartest little doggy in the pack. So, yeah, that's entirely possible. So,
all right,
Austin,
we should...
What if they added a solar eclipse to Battlegrounds? Yes.
Oh, my God.
Can you die if
you look up at the sun?
Just like a temporary moment where the game gets incredibly dark.
Right, but if you look into the sun, it's like you've looked into a flashbang, so you just can't see anything anymore.
Yes!
I'm watching this footage here on twitch.tv/NASA, and I've seen eclipse footage, and I've seen, I've seen pictures of an eclipse. It's so dark, I hadn't thought about how dark it would be.
Okay, let's go dark on this podcast so we can go get dark.
Yeah, we are going to miss the eclipse because Austin is watching the eclipse stream. I'm narrating to us.
Patrick,
holy shit! All right, it's over, guys. I guess we should wrap this up so you can go watch the eclipse.
All right, I'm going to close that window. I'm going to close all of my Twitch windows. I'm going to close all YouTubes. I'm going to close everything. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
Danielle R.I. on Twitter.
Patrick Klepek.
Find me at Patrick Klopik.
Rob Zachney.
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
And you can find everything we do on Twitter at Waypoint, twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/Waypoint Vice, Waypoint at, nope, Waypoint dot waypointvice.com. You can find all the videos that we do at youtube.com/waypointvice. That is going to do it for us today, and I hope you've enjoyed your eclipse. By the time you hear this, it will have already happened. I think everywhere in the world, anywhere that's getting hit by this eclipse, it will have already happened. So I hope you're safe and you had a good time. We'll catch you on Friday for another episode. We should figure out when we're going to do the first Waypoint 101 of Wolfenstein and the New Order, because we announced that last week. Maybe next week, maybe like next Wednesday or something, we should do that.
I really prefer not do it then, but...
Okay, we'll talk.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
All right, we'll figure that out. We'll make a post to that in the on the website and over in the forums. All right, everybody, talk soon. Peace.
Be good and be good at it.
There it is. Peace.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.